Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Today we are interviewing, or I am, David North Martino. And he's been writing a lot of interesting stuff. The book that we're going to talk about, or we're going to talk about all of his writing because it's the first time, but The Wolves of Vengeance. So thank you, David, for being here.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me.
So where did writing... Yeah, let's start with you because you're the first time. So when you started writing... What made you start writing? What was it that drew you into actually sitting down and putting it on paper?
That's interesting. I think, you know, the interesting thing is I originally wanted to be a comic book artist. And my grandmother wanted to, when I went to see her, she wanted to instill, She just wanted to instill a lifelong love of reading. And what she ended up doing, was just buying me all sorts of comic books. And at first I thought that through reading those comic books, and I did graduate to reading short stories and novels, but I thought I wanted to be an artist. And then over a period of time, I realized that I didn't really want to draw. I wanted to tell a story. And I was trying to tell the story through the art, through artwork. And I was trying to scribble it all out. And I ended up reading a interview by a comic book creator, artist, writer by the name of Jim Starlin. And he had an interview where he mentioned that he was thinking about doing more novels, doing more short stories, writing more. And I said, you know, I've never thought of that. And this is when I was very young. I was like 13 or so. So that was kind of my first, when I just began to think about actually putting, you know, so to speak, pen to page.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I wonder, because I'm always interested in this, because what was the point where you felt you were good enough? Do you know what I mean? Because like for myself, I was a late starter myself, so it took me a while. But if you actually when you're writing your very first project, your first book or short story or whatever it is that you're going to put out in the world, what give you the courage to do that? Like, what made you think, oh yeah, this is good enough, and you actually felt strong enough to actually let it go in public?
I think what that was actually just a realization that writers, even writers like Stephen King, end up getting tons of rejection. So I remember asking my wife to, this was back when I first tried my hand at it. I had settled down enough that I could focus. And this was like 96, 97. And I asked her to get me a Writer's Digest for my birthday or what have you. And I said, you know, I'll make a promise to you that I'll, because she knew I wanted to write, that I'll write a story, I'll send it out, and I'll get my first rejection. Right? Yeah. And I'm like, and I thought, I can deal with that. I know that I'm probably going to get a rejection. And I'm going to learn from that. So that's what I did. She got me the Writer's Digest, and I started to look through Writer's Market, and I started to look through it and started to write some stories. And I think since you say that, I have to back up just to say, I had a couple times in school, and I didn't like school. I especially didn't like high school.
Right.
And what happened was, I had teachers. I had one teacher who, I'll tell this story. I was in high school, in English class. I was in what author Brian Keene calls bonehead English. Right? It was just, it wasn't great. There were, up above this English class was college prep. And then you went from college prep and you had honors English. And I didn't want to do college prep, and I didn't want to do honors English because I wanted to read science fiction books. I wanted to read horror books. I didn't want to have to spend my summer reading everything that they were going to require me to read. So I was kind of hiding out. And then one Halloween, my teacher ended up saying, you know, I want everybody to write a short story for Halloween. And I said, I'm going to have to do this because I really wanted to write. So I sat down, I wrote a short story. It, even though I was reading a lot of fiction at the time, it still was very much a ripoff of like John Carpenter's Halloween. And it was a slasher. And it was a different time. Today, you'd get suspended or expelled for writing a story like this. But I wrote it. I asked my mother to edit it. I went back down. We had a Commodore 64-128. There was a family computer. I typed it up. I submitted it, and I'm like, and I think she was surprised that I just like turned in homework. Yeah. You know? And so a few days went by, and she read the stories, and she came in and she rolled up my story. She rolled it up. She walked over to me and smacked me in the head with it and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean? What am I doing? You said that you wanted me to write a short story. I wrote a short story." She said, "You have talent, and you're not living up to your potential. You know, you should be in honors English. You should be teaching this class." And I was like, "Oh yeah, whatever." But that was, I think, one of the first times that I realized that maybe I had a little bit of talent, and that, you know, as a, you know, diamond in the rough as it always is, that I needed to, kind of polish that up and get better at it. So when I decided to submit, I kind of knew that I might have, you know, a little bit of talent, and that I might be able to, you know, get to that point where I could expand it.
Well, it's, you know, but that's, you know, school. I mean, what was that, in the 80s or something?
Yeah, that was the 80s.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, for me, I was growing up in the 60s. And
okay. Yep.
I was writing with my left hand, and the teacher would smack me with the ruler because that was against,
yes.
That was just so wrong.
It was against the rules.
The other thing was I'm colorblind, and I'm also autistic, so I spoke yep. not. And I couldn't tell colors. So they thought I was kind of a bad kid,
yeah,
you know, because I wouldn't answer them, and I didn't. So because back then they didn't really understand that sort of thing. So there's always that challenge when you're younger, and especially in a school, because yeah. the schools are standard, right? They're looking for rules and that and all that stuff. But do you feel comfortable with grammar? Do you feel comfortable with prose, with actually the words? Or is the story more important to you, and is that what you center on?
That's a good question. You know, I'm basically a pantser, or, you know, an organic writer. And I think I realized that I could kind of hear in my head the voices, right? But hear in my head, transcribe the voices in your head.
Keep away from the capital, then.
Exactly.
Hear voices.
But the... but I could hear kind of like the rhythm of language. And so I've never been that much of a plotter or that much of somebody who sits down and does an outline. I kind of have an idea of where I'm going with the story, whether it's a short story or a novel. With a novel, I kind of have kind of an idea eventually of what the plot might be. But I just kind of start with sometimes I have a lot of the idea in my head. Sometimes I don't. And I kind of follow it. And then, you know, it's very labor intensive because then afterwards you have to cut tons of stuff out. But I find that if I write an outline that I'm not like with the character. And I end up writing stuff that the character isn't going to do. That the character isn't going to do, the character isn't going to, the character refuses to do this stuff. Or I realize the character wouldn't do this. And if I'm writing and I'm right with that character and I follow that character to the end, it usually that character is more congruent and I kind of find the story. I don't know if that answered your question. But.
Yeah, it sort of gave me an idea because the thing is, for me, I've always written true stories, nonfiction. And so yeah. I don't have that, luxury, I guess you want to call it. But I don't have that. I can't really play around with what is and who these people are. I can only find out about them and then lay it out there. So it's different.
Exactly.
So I'm interested in someone that like you. And so when I talk to a lot of people that write fiction, whether it's crime fiction, horror, sci-fi, all this sort of stuff. So I always say, so it's about your character or characters, but how do you develop them and where do they come from? And this is it's a full question because, I mean, I've had people on that have said that their characters are like their kids, like their family, they're people, they're real to them. So to speak, and they use them and they develop them and the whole thing. Like, it's really important. Some other people are not so much that way. They're so it sounds to me like how you're explaining how you write. You're not the outline and structure and all this, and then this person does this, and they have to go through this. You're the character, and you're writing from that point of view.
Correct.
So where does that, you know, so your character, first of all, where does that come from? Is that from, you know, people you know, your family, or is it someone you've seen at a coffee shop or in a supermarket or like, so how does a character come to you?
Yes. But, it's interesting. Sometimes the character will come fully formed just in my head and I don't know where they came from. Other times, I might use a composite, a portion of a character. Like in Wolves of Vengeance, one of my main characters is Jack Amon. And Jack is based in part on a guy actually from high school who I didn't get along with. We almost ended up in a couple fist fights. We didn't like each other, but he ended up a few years out of high school. He ended up dying of a drug overdose. And it put things in perspective a little bit for me. And I was like, wow, you know, what was so bad in his life that had caused this? And I kind of wanted to write a story about a guy. And again, it's not him, but who, you know, was probably the character did criminal activity. I don't know if he did, but the character did criminal activity, abused drugs, abused alcohol, was a bully. And I wanted to write a story where he was able to turn his life around. And so at the beginning of his part of the story, he has turned his life around. But then he finds out that a kid that he bullied, and he didn't, he kind of remembers this. There's like these wild animal attacks on his friends, like just his friends, from the old days at his old hometown. And he ends up realizing that maybe this kid who was into the occult, who cursed him, maybe this curse is coming for him. And he doesn't, doesn't totally believe that exactly, but he returns to try to find out what's going on and to try to reconcile his past. So with his character is kind of based partially on this other character, this person who lived, who was alive, who I knew, probably partially on some parts of my own personality. I will sometimes, even if I'm having trouble hearing the character's voice, it didn't so much happen with him, but I'll think about a celebrity who has an interesting voice, and I'll use their voice in my head. I usually do a composite. And I just pull from different things, from my old, I might take a part of myself. Let's say the part when, I decided to go back to school. That was a different side of my personality, as opposed to the side of my personality that was rebellious. So I could take that rebellious side and kind of turn it into a character, because characters aren't fully fledged people. They're an illusion, because characters have to be very congruent, and people aren't always, and they have to be simplified. So you can take a character that's like yourself, a portion of yourself from a certain time in your life, and then, mix it with people that you know, or people that you've met. I had a short story published where I used partially this one guy that I worked for, who was a boot camp instructor, and he had a very strong personality, and he would always come up to me, North Martino. so I used him for a character who was running a security department. So I pull from people I know, but I try very, try not to use too much of that. Of one person, so that people don't know it's that person.
But the part that you're pulling, like when you say, okay, so I pull a certain thing that, out of this character, like there's something that you've come across about a person you might have known, and you take that part and you're going to use it in the one you're writing about. What parts are you taking? You taking parts that you don't like about that person, Are you taking parts that you maybe do like? And when you say taking parts of yourself, again, are you taking things that you'd like to change about yourself, you think?
Oh, that's interesting. It's very possible. I mean, I think it's both. I think sometimes you take something from about somebody that you like or that you find endearing, like the guy who had been a boot camp instructor, and he was very harsh, but in, you know, a tough love sort of way.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, and I haven't thought about that part. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of writers I know, you know, end up writing about parts of themselves that they didn't like, or maybe their own addictions, and they didn't know they were doing it.
Right.
So that's interesting.
I see, because I've had conflict with some other radio people, and okay. And when I looked at it, I kind of thought, you know, there are people that I really like their work. But I think what it was I was picking out parts of myself that I see in them that I didn't like.
Oh, interesting.
It's really interesting because now I've become friends with some, and I realized, I think one of them, when we were kind of snapping at each other, I think we both realized that, you know, a lot of it is, we had a lot of each other in each other, and it's a unique thing, because sometimes if you're writing it down in a way, you're sort of changing that part.
Yeah, you are. It's kind of like a transformation of like the shadow, you know, your own shadow of the, you know, Jung talks about, you know, the dark side of yourself, the side that you don't like or that you don't acknowledge.
Right. And nobody can see the shadow except for the people that are bad.
Oh, interesting.
Right. You see, the evil in that person is how they hear the shadow.
Okay.
You see, so there's that. It's just a concept. That's all. So I always try to say, well, you know, if you're putting parts of yourself into this, I wonder if how much is it that, you know, you like or dislike, or you'd like to change, or you like about yourself that you'd like to put out there. That's all. I just think deeper of things like that, because I can't do that. Well, you know, because my character, they just go out and kill 20 people. I can tell you what that character is and does and what people, you know, but I can't really, you know, I don't have that type of relationship that people that write fiction do with their characters.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. I think too much. I can.
Don't we all?
Gets me into trouble. Ears start bleeding. Sometimes I say the wrong thing, but well, I just like exploring these things because
it's all part of the fun.
Yeah, and it also, I think what it does is it helps you move on in your writing. You know, because I find each one I write is usually better than the one before, and it's because I've been through what I've been through to get there. Do you know what I mean? And then you think about your feedback and that. Does feedback mean anything to you? Like, are you still at the point where, okay, you put out this book, like let's say Wolf of Vengeance, and then someone comes along and goes, well, you know, I'm not talking about the troll that just does one star and this guy can't write and all this, right? But just someone that goes to you 2.5 or 3 stars, go, well, yeah, it was okay. I didn't mind it. And yeah, it was okay. And stuff like that. Does that affect you?
You know, it's interesting because it doesn't affect me that much. And maybe that's how I've been able to deal with lots of rejection over the years, because, I especially like when I get feedback from editors, and even if it's harsh, if I can learn something from it, you know, you really can't, I mean, I, you know, you kind of, you feel a little like, oh, that's, you know, unfortunate that somebody didn't like it. But, you know, I find it interesting because writing is so subjective. And I wrote a story that I was trying to make it appear. What I was trying to do, I was trying to put the reader on like a train, like a freight train on the tracks, and where they could see the tracks, like a bridge. They could see the bridge was out down the line, but there was nothing they could do about it. And I had so to do that, I didn't really have any twists in the story, and the story was solved. And you know, I did get criticism from that from one reader, and thought that the story was very well put together, but there was no twist. They knew what was going to happen, and you know, and that's how they, you know, it's kind of how they perceived that story, and they really wanted a twist. The twist that I came up with originally, I didn't think it had enough power. And my wife usually edits my work, and she didn't think we had enough power. So I stayed with, the original version, and the editor purchased it. And you know, at the end of the day, the editor, who has determined that your story is good enough to be published, and gives you money for it, that they're the one that that matters to me more. But I do, you know, I'm very, and it's not that I don't, you know, if people read my work, I'd love to hear what they have to say about it. And I'm very open to that type of criticism.
So you shouldn't be. I got two more bad reviews. So, no, to hell with them.
Hell with them. Exactly. Exactly. You're right. You're right. I'm gonna take on.
I'm going to hunt them down.
Hunt them down and get them.
And, well, you know, sometimes it gets to me.
But you're human.
Well, the thing is, I'm not so much about my writing, because I do know that I have my limitations, and that I've gotten better through the time. Everything moves on. But so I, you know, I don't care if someone says, well, you know, there's just not enough, you know, words for them, I guess. That's fine. But I'm kind of writing a report. I'm kind of writing a happening, and I try to put stuff into it. But, you know, you can't take it too personal, I guess. No. And there's people that do want to lash out. Like they might be having a really bad day, or they might be having a really bad something. And do you like to kill people that you don't like? No, I asked that because JD Horn, right? He's a best-selling writer, and when we talked to him back in the spring, he was like, you know, some lady pushed him in a line, called him a name or something, and he was just like, oh, okay, and then he took her and he killed her in his book. He added her as an accessory character, but he made sure she had a really bad death. And so I was just wondering if I always ask that question, because that fascinated me that people do that. And I'm thinking, well, I'm never going out to the coffee shop anymore, because.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that. And I just remembered this. I have a novel that I'm almost done with. And it was funny because, like, the third act of the book, I wasn't exactly sure where it was going. And I ended up having.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
When these neighbors move in, because I had, they're no longer there, but we had neighbors move in. We live in a townhouse condo.
I was going to say, did you kill them? Like what?
Yes. So I killed the neighbor. I created characters based on the two neighbors, and they were very loud, and they just had a lot of loud, wild parties. And I feel like maybe they were there for a reason so that I could put them in the book. But I did. I mean, every one of the, I mean, I didn't know exactly, like I only knew the two neighbors. I really didn't know their friends. So their friends were just kind of, just totally made up. And yeah, and I had them all killed.
In a bad way.
In a really bad way in the supernatural novel. And,
well, I guess that sort of, that kind of
helps. It's cathartic.
Yeah, it kind of helps you get through things. I mean, but that brings me up, before I get into the other stuff, I was thinking, this last year in America and around the world, but in America specifically, because America has not really been living up to what they usually do. So in a lot of different ways. But when you've got all this stress going on, you've got like the pandemic, you've got the nutball president, you've got the sorry if you like Trump, but if you've got the Black Lives Matters and the riots. I mean, it's been a stressful year.
Crazy year.
So when you've got that going on, I ask this of a lot of writers. What happens to you in the writing part? Like, do you let that? I mean, I know you're not writing about pandemics and stuff like this, but do you let the stress and the unknown that's around you that affects you? Like, you can't turn on the TV without hearing it. You can't go on social media.
Yeah.
But so when that's going on a daily basis, does this seep into your writing, do you think?
That's interesting.
Yeah, because I've had some people that say yes, and some people that say it gets really dark and it's got darker than normal and they feel that way. Then you got people that say, no, I totally live in a fantasy. And so when I go into the writing, it's just all gone. And then you've got a few people like myself that you just kind of almost shut down. You for a day or two, you just can't write, right? So it's everyone's different. I was just wondering with someone like you.
Yeah, that's, I, you know, it's interesting. I think I have two answers to that question. The first answer is that I ended up writing a dystopic science fiction story that I wrote specifically to send to Writers of the Future, because I've gotten some honorable mentions from them, and I wanted to of course see if I could win the contest eventually. So I wrote something, but it was dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was dark. And it was, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess too, I have been doing a lot more editing because it doesn't take as much focus. I've talked to some writers and stuff, and they're like, I'm having a hard time reading. I mean, I see this on social media. I'm having a hard time reading with all the craziness going on. And but I found that I didn't have to focus as much to do certain parts of the editing.
Right.
Whereas when I'm inside of a story, I really have to kind of get immersed. It's interesting because I did that, and I also wrote a story. I wrote a story for Weird Tales. They were going to have a contest, but I think because of COVID and stuff, they ended up dropping it. And it was a very dark serial killer story. So yeah, I think now that you say that, and I'm aware of it, I think my writing has gotten darker.
Yeah, I don't see how it could. Right. You know, some of the people that tell me they don't, I sort of think, well, I guess it depends on your relationship with what the stress is and what the problems are. I mean, because if you're in a household and someone important dies or something goes on, it has to affect your mood. Whether it makes you sad or happy. I don't know. It depends on the neighbors. Maybe you're happy.
Yeah. But it's all channeled in.
Yeah. I just don't see how it could not come out in the way you talk, the way you think, and the way you write. But I only ask the questions, but because it certainly affects me. I know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you know, hey, that's me.
Well, you know, now that you say it, it's sometimes until a light is shined on it, you go, wait a minute, yeah.
Yeah, you're not as
my stuff is darker, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, I've been killing everyone in this one. They've all got a disease, you know. Well, you know, you have to wonder because, you see, the thing is when I look at the world right now and I look at things, again, I'm writing a nonfiction because I've done cult books and I've done things and conspiracy, mm-hmm. and I kind of look at things and I see that these always take a huge spike when there's a lot of, there's a lot of insecurity. There's a lot of people that are feeling scared. A lot of people are feeling unsure. And when we feel that way, we head toward either a religion or a conspiracy or a cult, it could be, or whatever it is. We do look for something for comfort, right? Like we have a lot more people looking.
And structure.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, and so I just wonder, with all of this going on, usually it would come out in what we do. Right? It's just, anyway, that's deep thoughts.
Yeah, deep thoughts.
Well,
it's very interesting.
Well, it is, because I think it's good. I think it's good to evaluate yourself in that way.
Absolutely.
Because you come out of it with a better range, I think, when you do that.
Absolutely.
You know, but you know, I'm just a dumb blonde. What do I know? But I had hair that was. Wow. Yeah. So and editing itself, I find that it's mechanical.
Yes.
More so for me.
And tedious.
Yeah, for sure. God, someone gives you like a 80,000 word manuscript. Oh my God. But yeah. I do not do that. I have good editors involved.
Oh, that's great.
And that makes a huge difference, but I understand what they go through. And the editors are the toughest. The ones that kind of give you the most grief are usually the best because, in a way, they're just making your book better.
Absolutely.
You know, even though they're a pain. You know, and I'm going to kill them in the next book.
they try to bring out the best in you, especially, you know, sometimes a chapter or a certain portion of the book may flag a little bit, and they try to bring that up to the level of the rest of the book.
What made you choose to go into the darker elements, like these sort of, and paranormal? So when you mentioned that paranormal fantasy, so supernatural sort of stuff, does that come from experience with paranormal yourself, or is that just out of the blue?
A little, you know. You know, of course, you know, we're talking about the 80s, and the 80s were horror, right? Horror was king.
Yeah.
And it was literally Stephen King. And you might like the story. Here's something that happened that was weird. And I don't know. Take it as you will. But so I, this was, I think, 1984. And I was probably 13. And a friend of the family, she came over. And she had a couple paperback books with her. And she walked up to me, like, in a very robotic manner. And she held these two books up, out to me. And she said, "Here, I think you will like these." And I said, you know, I asked her, "I will?" And she said, "Yes." And then she handed me, I took the books, and she walked away, and it was like kind of like nothing had happened. So I ended up reading the books, and one of them, there was a British writer by the name of Martin Thomas, and he wrote The Hand of Cain, which was like an occult horror novel. And he also, he at least wrote one book under the house name Peter Saxon for The Guardians. It was a book called The Curse of Rathlaw. And these were 60s books, late 60s. And they were, I think they were reissues that you could buy on the stand.
Right.
And the Hand of Cain was very cheesy. Especially even by 1980 standards, it was really cheesy. But I really liked it. It was really interesting. And the other book, The Curse of Rathlaw, was like reading a hard R movie. It was really out there. My parents always let me read whatever I wanted. That was no big deal. But it was really strange because I finished the books. I ended up seeing her, and I said, "Thanks for giving me these books. I really enjoyed them," and she said, "Oh, that's where those books went." I gave them to you. and all of a sudden, it's like you hear the Twilight Zone music in your head. And I don't know if she was messing with me or if that was Providence saying, go in this.
No, she's a heroin addict.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
No, I mean, I'm open to all possibilities, but I mean, she was probably stoned.
Very possible.
Probably didn't even know who she was. She thought she was giving the books to Jesus. Yeah.
But it makes a good story, right?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, weird things happen, but that's sort of...
That's the thing. So, yeah, I mean, of course, the 1980s were filled with... what was it? Was really big in the 80s? I can't think of
it. Slashers.
Well, slashes were, but kind of a different type of the occult. Palmistry and crystals and all of this stuff. And back then, I was reading books on ESP, and, like I said, palmistry and crystal healing and Hans Holzer and ghosts and all that stuff. And I was just eating all that stuff up. And I was, and before that I had read, I was basically reading, science fiction and fantasy. And I've had a little bit of, strange things. I don't know if I should tell the story, but I was in like 1991. My friend and I had gone into a local occult shop, and they were really big at the time. And we went in, and this is of course before I met my wife, and we were kind of, my friend and I were kind of flirting a little bit with the
bruising the girl behind the desk.
we were kind of flirting with her and stuff. And her husband walked in. Uh-oh. He turned out to be a ceremonial magician. And it was just a weird thing because when he walked into the room, all I felt was heat. It was really strange. I didn't say anything. And I walked, when my friend and I walked out, I asked him, I said, "Did you feel anything in there?" He's like, "Yeah, it was like a blast furnace." And I'm like, I don't know what that was. So, you know, I'm certainly open to the possibility, but, you know, there's ways to explain everything away and stuff. But, it, you know, these are fun stories, right?
Do you think, you know, it's interesting, too, because when we talk horror, you know, the classics, things like Dracula, Frankenstein, real old, and things that they were doing in the 50s and 60s, compared to what they're doing now, what's your preference?
Oh, interesting. It's difficult because, you know, those movies are the foundation for what's being done today, and what was being done, you know, within the 80s. And, I tend to like more modern retellings and more modern horror than I do the old 50s and 60s. My wife loves the old 50s and 60s movies, and I do too. You know, we like to watch, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
And the Dracula, Bela Lugosi, and, you know, Sven Gulli.
Yeah, Sven Gulli. Yeah, every Saturday night I watch.
It's fun. It's fun. You know, and it's interesting that people back then, those movies were scary. They could be scary. And I think, you know, as we get more sophisticated, we get more jaded.
Yeah.
There needs to be a greater level of horror. I just watched not long ago, you know, well, it was 2018, but like Halloween 2018. I love that movie. I know not everybody liked it, but I thought that was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. But what, you know, I just wonder because I see a lot of modern day versions tend to be a lot more graphic, and they're a lot better at their effects, of course.
Yes.
So it's much more realistic, and it's, you know, because in the 60s they didn't have that.
That's right.
And so when you watch the older ones, you had to rely more on the characters and the words and just the whole scening. And so it was harder, I think, if you either get into it or you don't. But nowadays there's so much flash going across the screen that...
That's true.
It's hard not to watch, but they don't have as much dialogue.
That's true. And I think sometimes they don't have as much... I think one of the problems, like one thing that I've noticed in some movies... is there's no internal conflict. You have these characters and they're kind of milling about and nobody is nobody's trying to be the foil. They kind of all get along and they're kind of following the plot and there's something that they have to defeat, but they don't have to struggle within themselves and within the group. And I find when that happens, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that with some more recent movies, is that there's no real struggle with characters who are saying, well, no, I don't want to do that. We need to go and do this. And, you know, and having a character who might say, well, you know, I'm out for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that some movies have lost that.
Well, I think, you know, if you don't have that, then you're not going to get to know your characters.
No.
They're hollow. They're just there.
Exactly.
And it won't matter as much when you cut their head off.
Exactly. You want to feel for those characters.
Yeah, or you want to laugh at them and you want to feel good.
Yeah, exactly. 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 You want to you know, just with a villain, a good villain, when the villain dies, you cheer. And it's the same thing when an annoying character in a horror movie gets offed, you know, it's part of that vicarious pleasure of a horror film.
Well, but I think there's also a lot of pressure. Like if you're on, you know, with Netflix and with all these streaming now, everyone's trying to fill their time and the schedule. And so there's a lot of generic characters being used over and over again. And that might be a problem, but if you're under the pressure to do a lot of writing, you kind of have to maybe. But the other thing I found of some of the modern days is driving me nuts, and this is probably just because I'm older. But they write into an old show, or like a show that's something that's happened in, you know, 1898. or 1910. And then they're doing things like "Sorry for your loss" as their lines, and things that they would never say back then.
Yes.
You know, or "Thank you for your service." It's like they didn't say that to you in 1910. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't fit. Like the characters are speaking 2020, not 1910.
Yes. And I've noticed that.
I think that's age.
I noticed that in the original Wonder Woman movie. You had Steve Trevor, and it was a fun movie, but you had Steve Trevor talking basically about divorce. And making it seem like people didn't get divorced in the First World War.
Permission. The other spouse had to give you a divorce. So
yeah.
Oh, I know. It drives me nuts. Well, the second one, have you seen the new one?
Yes.
Oh my God. You know what drives me nuts? I mean, people pick out all sorts of stuff, but you know what I pick out?
Mm-hmm.
So Wonder Woman has an accent. But when she's back on Amazon, none of them have that accent. And then when they go back to her childhood, when she's a kid, she doesn't have that accent. How did she get that? See, things like that bother me. And a lot of people go, "Oh, that's silly. Don't worry." But no, it's not, because what happens is I get focused on that, and then that's all I think about, and then it ruins it. You know, that's just me, I guess. But it was a bad one anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know why. I feel like with some judicious editing, they can't make it a good movie, but they could fix it. I think 2.5 hours was way too much for that film. It felt like 5 hours.
Yeah. You might as well have a mini series.
Yeah.
But I think with that stuff too, I think they're under the gun and they try to rush it and get it out. And they're under pressure, and nobody checks. I mean, that was the same as the, you know, with that dragon thing on the HBO, whatever, the Crowns, you know, remember it?
Oh, you're talking about Game of Thrones?
Yeah. I mean, look at that last season. It was like they tried to wrap it all up in a quick place and a quick ending, and you know, you got Starbucks coffee cups, you got bottles of water on the set, you got, you know what I mean? Because everyone's so pushed to do everything so fast, and you can't have a real intricate, well done series for so many years, then all of a sudden, let's just do it all, and they wrap it all up, and it's like, you know,
and it's usually on the studio.
Yeah, of course. It's a combination of stuff, and it's just.
Yeah.
But it kind of ruins it. It's okay. You kind of go, "Well, yeah, it's okay," but it wasn't great. And I mean,
it takes the rest of the show.
Yeah, and plus, you know, I mean, God, I couldn't even see the dragons at the end. All I saw was a lot of smoke. So it was really dark.
Yeah, really dark. I heard about that.
Yeah.
But you really had to watch it on like a 4K Blu-ray disc.
Oh, and even then.
To see it.
It felt like I was walking down a really dark road with no lights. It wasn't comfortable. So, I don't know. But, you know, but again, there might be the pressure. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, and that's probably the pressure to get it done, wrap it up.
So here's the hard question I always ask.
Okay.
So when you write the book, so Wolves of Vengeance, for instance. So you write it, finish it, put it out there and stuff. Someone like me goes out, "Oh, this looks interesting. I buy it."
Okay.
Take it home. I read it. Besides the story itself, is there something you want me to take away from that book? Is there something you want me to take away from reading that, to get that's underlying in the story? Do you have some sort of a theme under there?
I usually do, and usually those themes come out maybe subconsciously at first, and then as I notice them, I kind of try to build them up and make them a little bit more prominent. You know, I don't like to ham-hand it and to ham-fist it and you know, beat somebody over the head with a theme or a moral or something like that. But yeah, it's interesting. With Wolves, I think. It's kind of, I don't know. I guess with that story, It's this idea of the feeling of a new beginning, the feeling of moving past your past, really, getting to that point where you're able to put your past into perspective, put the bad parts into the rearview mirror, and kind of drive forward into a new day and kind of a new beginning type thing. And I feel that when you read, you're so close to the character when you're reading as opposed to film, that when the character has a transformation, you also have that transformation as well, if you're open to it. And so it's kind of like allowing people to, you know, get rid of, you know, maybe that shadow, the stuff, the baggage, and to move forward.
Yeah, kill their names.
Yeah.
So they can move forward. Get out of town before it's too late. Now, website. Do you have a website, or do you have a place that you want people to come and stalk you and
yes,
do things to you?
Yes, exactly. I always enjoy a good stalking.
Yeah.
Let's see. That'd be dnorthmartino with no hyphen .com. Usually you have to do like http://.
Yeah.
And that's so my blog. Yeah. And that's a good way to kind of find what I'm doing. And I try to update it. I've fallen out of updating it because of the pandemic, and I just fell out of it. But
yeah. So do you have like swear words and dirty pictures on there and stuff?
Yes. Okay. a full list, and you know, you can just rifle through all the stuff. And
yeah, it's going to be on my favorites now.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. No. So what we do is we will put your book, your blog as well. We'll do all that up there, so it connects to our website, so people listening can do one click and they can find you. And by all means, please, he's looking for, now David would like as many one-star bad reviews as
possible. Yes, exactly.
Go all out. Say the worst things you can say. Get banned. Go for it. You know,
I welcome it.
Yeah, there you go. Then you have more people to kill in the next book. Yeah,
exactly. You will die in my next novel.
That's right, and it's not going to be pretty. Well, great. Now, your, awesome. Book, your last book out is called Wolves of Vengeance, and our guest has been David North Martino. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Al. I really appreciate it.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.